Now, this year's Shake and Bog Festival will focus on the life of renowned filmmaker and environmentalist Eamon de Butler. Colin Stafford Johnson is taking part in the panel discussion and he's with me now in a booth down the corridor. How are you doing, Colin?
Oh, I'm very well, Ray. Thanks. Yeah, no worries.
Sorry, I feel a bit rude inviting you into the radio centre and then putting you off in a booth. But that's
it's quite all right.
I'm sure things will change in the coming weeks. But anyway, so Eamon de Butler, his name was synonymous with wildlife photography and camera work for a long time in this country. He was the first, wasn't he?
He was very much the first, yeah. And I think that's what will always, always have a real special place because of that. And of course, back in the days when there was very little choice around, I guess, in television.
Yes.
And so, you know, now you can tune into so many channels. But it was really quite an event when one of his series came on, you know.
Yeah.
You sort of knew it was coming on. And it was great. And they were great programmes. And it was, you know, it was a time when I think he taught a lot of people a lot of things about our natural world.
And was he a hero of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I knew him. I worked with him in sort of at the sort of very start of my career, I suppose. And he would always give me advice and that sort of thing. And then I ended up working on the same series with him, a series called Wild Islands. I think that was back in the 90s, I guess.
Okay.
And he ended up, of course, but he was the only person who could actually film, pretty much edit, narrate and play the music for all his own shows.
Right.
So he was a multi...
He was a one-stop shop.
He really was. He really was. Yeah,
well, wouldn't
yeah,
he
yeah.
do well now, wouldn't he? Because that's the way it's gone again. It's come full circle nearly, hasn't it?
I know, but don't be telling the powers to be that or they'd have you doing everything.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
I remember somebody pointing out his house to me out in Delgany. Isn't that where he lived? And I think there was a pheasant in the garden or something. Or not a pheasant. Might have been a peacock. Not a pheasant. A pheasant wouldn't be that remarkable, but a peacock would be. Yeah, there was a he had a peacock roaming around the garden, did he, out there? Yeah.
He did indeed. And I think I passed that way not too long ago and I think I heard it calling. Every time I hear a peacock, I think of tigers because they live with tigers in India. I spent a lot of my life in India filming tigers and I associate that sound intimately with India and indeed the roar of a tiger. So it's always sort of odd to hear one over here.
And do they live alongside each other in perfect harmony?
Well, not perfect harmony. I mean, if the tiger can catch one, they probably will. Leopards get them mostly. But they roost high up in the trees at night. You see them on the ground, but they roost high up in the trees at night, away from danger.
Okay.
And then they tend to travel in groups and mostly avoid tigers. I saw one taken one day, but an unwary peacock.
Yeah. So Saturday, the 11th of September at Mermaid Arts from 10 a.m. And you're involved in the panel discussion. That'll start at 12 noon and more information at shakingbog.ie. Now, you're doing something which I think there's a growing interest in and that is sort of wilding. Is there a verb now to wild something? Or
Well, I hope so. It's becoming that way. At least it's something, once you say it, people sort of know what you're talking about. And it's the idea is trying to really promote the native over the exotic too. So I'm designing a garden. My dad was the first TV gardener on Irish TV.
Yes.
And I grew up in a garden centre in the nurseries and, you know...
And you're a trained horticulturist, are you?
I was trained by my dad.
Oh, you're... Right,
I wasn't
okay.
officially trained.
Right,
No. So I know very little about it in some level. So, yeah. And I admit that openly at the start of the programme. So this is a series for BBC and it's, I think it's called The Wild Gardener. And so the idea is trying to design a garden just using native Irish plants.
Okay.
Because the key is, if you have all those native plants there, they are the plants upon which our insects depend. The plants start everything. The greater diversity of plants you have, the greater diversity of insects you will have. And then everything up the chain follows on from that. And an awful lot of the gardening we do, in fact, is environmentally... what would you say? Not very good.
Okay, yes.
You know.
It's not as simple as just returning to the way it was before people started gardening. It's a bit more difficult than that, I think.
There's plenty to it. And there's much in it as you want it to be. Now, I'd be a pretty idle gardener. I want to do the minimum. You know, I don't have the time.
Well, wilding sounds like it's right up your street then.
Well, it is. But you put in, you know, a native hedgerow as opposed to a hedge.
Yes.
All the different native plants, the hawthorns and
the native hedgerow would have been the one that we would have played. We had a tunnel in it down the back of the garden. Tiny little dark green leaves on it. Is that the traditional one?
Well, it may not be, you see. You may be describing a hedge, which often is a fairly dead thing. Uh-huh. A lot of hedges we grow are really, the odd bird might nest in them, but they're not really advantageous to wildlife.
Okay. Whereas
if you plant a native hedgerow with, you know, hawthorn and whitethorn and guelder rose and spindle.
So that was actually a hedge as opposed to a
Exactly. But if you go for a wander along a country lane and there's a hedge row with all the different sort of native Irish trees in it, that is the thing that's most valuable.
Okay.
And why not have that in your garden as opposed to your standard old hedge? You don't have to do it. It's very easy to grow. And that's the thing. I haven't had to water anything in my garden in the last 2 years because everything's adapted to this climate.
Okay.
So it just grows.
There's a growing number of people talking about this and a growing number of people getting interested in it and people wanting to do it in their back gardens. Do you think it's a fad or do you think it's here to stay?
I don't think it's fad at all. I think we are on the cusp of a total change. I think a lot of us feel that, you know, there's not an awful lot we can do about what's happening in the world, but this is something everyone can do. Look out your window, look out at your lawn and your hedge and think, well, no wonder there's nothing living out there because I haven't given them any place to live, you know. But if you create ponds and hedgerows and then also, you know, fruit trees and all that sort of thing as well. But if you base your garden on native things, it will automatically start to fill up with the wild things.
We'll see this when it eventually goes out in the BBC. But you have a plot of about an acre in Wicklow.
That's right. That's right. An old sort of family plot where my dad used to garden. And once upon a time, when I was a kid, it was sort of it was an orchard with almost Wimbledon grass underneath it.
Perfectly kept.
when I went to have a look at it, it was just one massive patch of brambles.
Right.
And now I try to convert that into something that's useful for as many creatures as possible. So the idea is that I'm hoping that the little creatures can come and live out their entire lives on my property.
Do you know what I came across when I was on holidays, and it never happened before? I encountered three or four dead little field mice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Little grey ones.
Yeah, beautiful little creatures.
Yes,
and of course, they're very important to have around. I mean, I've got lots of them on my property. I don't see them all the time. But recently, I had long-eared owls hunting in the garden, and that's what they would have been hunting.
Right, OK.
So again, you promote the, once you get the wild flowers in, the wild seeds come, and all the, you know, the field mice and the newts and the frogs and the butterflies and the dragonflies and damselflies and all these things will just turn up. And it's a wonderful, so I'm very much thinking, not what it looks like to me, but how useful it will be.
Well, you see,
them.
Here's the thing. You've hit on my next question. It's the aesthetic of a garden that appeals to a lot of people, isn't it?
It is, but I think aesthetics are changing. I mean, I remember, I come from that place with the manicured
the perfectly
lawns.
And
now I just look at it and I think, why did I find that acceptable? When I know I always had an interest in the natural world and that is doing nothing for the natural world, you know. And a lot of us, I mean, some people are mad keen about the gardens. I'm not expecting everyone to go and dig them up and get rid of them. But a lot of us aren't all that mad keen about gardening and don't want to spend a lot of time in it. So why not go wild and go native? And it's cheap too.
I'm nearly sure his name is Paul Harkin. I don't know if you've heard about this man and his family, that they've created what he believes to be the world's first wild bee sanctuary. In Wicklow.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have down in Tinnaheely someplace.
Yes. So he's doing that as well. And it, because when I think about it, you know, how do you know, like, it's not as if you can cordon them in and you see this spot of land with all the bees and then when you go beyond that, there are no bees there. You know, so how do you measure? You mentioned the owls already. How do you measure how successful your project is?
Well, when I stand in my garden at this time of year, you can hear this low hum.
Right.
That you can sense the life in it. It's full of buzzing things.
Isn't that lovely?
Honeybees and solitary bees and butterflies fluttering by and all these things, because the food plants that the butterflies need to lay their eggs are there.
Right.
The plants that the moths need to lay their eggs on are there. So everything, you know, once the plants are there, once the infrastructure is there for these creatures, they will just turn up. And it's, you know, some things turn up really quickly, and it's been a really good experience. I mean, I set off saying I am not a gardener, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are garden designers who could design something that looks aesthetically beautiful as well in a more conventional way. I'm more kind of chuck things around and see if they grow. And I like that really.
Let nature do its thing.
Nature is the guiding hand. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's on November on the BBC. Just, I suppose people are going, but what about maintenance, Ray? What about, ask them about maintenance. So if you do this, say it, if you decide to do it at home, all of your back garden, if you're looking to have one or a bit of it. Is it maintenance free?
Not maintenance free, no. Everything needs management. It's not this idea that you just abandon a patch of land. If you want a wildflower meadow, you've got to work at it. But the good news is you only have to cut the grass once a year and clear it once a year. Now, there's a lot of people thinking, give us a wild garden. Hedges maybe trim back every few years. You know, there's actually very little to go. Ponds almost look after themselves. Right. So it's minimal work. Minimal expenditure too.
Sounds attractive. Sounds very attractive.
I hope so.
Yeah. So just I'll tell him again about the Shake and Bog Festival, shakeandbog.ie. Colin Stafford-Johnson, good luck with everything. Thanks so much for coming into our booth today. And mind yourself. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.